This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. The Me Too movement has upended a status quo that tolerated sexual harassment at work. Well, in some workplaces. Exotic dancers, adult film actors, escorts, and other sex workers say they still fear retribution and ridicule for speaking out. This month, two porn actresses spoke up with allegations of various abuses, including excessively physical treatment on set, violation of boundaries, and being misled about what their scenes would involve. We might be talking about a business which is seen as working in the margins, but porn and sex work are far from marginal. By some estimates, pornography makes more money than Major League Baseball, the NFL, and the NBA combined. And America may have well over a million people who describe themselves in one way or another as sex workers. And right now, we know that an adult performer named Stormy Daniels is making big political headlines by coming forward about her affair with President Trump, pushing her line of work further into the mainstream. Fair warning, this conversation, not surprisingly, could get fairly graphic with detailed but not obscene discussions of sex and sexual acts. Bear that in mind, and we'll get started in just a moment. Stay close.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from GoToMeeting. It's the simple, flexible, collaborative meeting tool that works for you so you can focus on getting work done. Trusted by 18 million monthly users, GoToMeeting lets you connect on the go from any device so you can move work forward from anywhere in the world. To learn how your company can make the switch today, visit GoToMeeting.com.
Hi, I'm Guy Raz.
And I'm Mindy Thomas.
And together, we bring you Wow in the World,
NPR's podcast for families.
Every week, we explore wild and new scientific discoveries.
We also ride a bird. Find Wow in the World on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Joining us from Los Angeles is Susie Q, the host of a podcast called The Whorecast, and she is the secretary of the Adult Performer Advocacy Committee. Susie, welcome to 1A.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor.
Joining us from Fort Smith, Arkansas is Chris Sardina, the coordinator for the Desiree Alliance, a coalition that fights for sex workers' rights. Chris, welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Also joining us from Los Angeles is Jackie St. James, an adult film director. Jackie, glad to have you with us.
Thank you so much.
And joining us from San Francisco is Shine Louise Houston, the founder of Pink and White Productions. Shine, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks.
I think we should just get right to the elephant in the room, which is Stormy Daniels. She's been making a lot of headlines lately. Here is a brief clip of her interview with Anderson Cooper that aired last night on 60 Minutes.
Jenna Jameson, another well-known adult film actress, said recently about you, the left looks at her as a whore and just uses her to try to discredit the president. The right looks at her like a treacherous rat. It's a lose-lose. Should have kept her trap shut.
I think that she has a lot of wisdom in those words.
That was Stormy Daniels as part of her interview last night on 60 Minutes in conversation with Anderson Cooper. I wonder, Shine Louise Houston, if I could just start with you. What do you make of her stepping forward? I'd like to hear from all four of you briefly, but Shine, what do you think of Stormy Daniels stepping forward, especially in light of what she said about being demagogued and denigrated by all sides?
I think she's very brave. I want a portrait of her as a saint because she's doing everyone within sex work a huge service by coming forward and saying her piece and being unapologetic about it. I think it's huge strides for breaking stigmas about like what a porn star is and how they're supposed to be, how they're supposed to act. She's very well-spoken. I think she's handling a lot of the internet trolls really well. I feel very indebted to her.
Jackie St. James, I wonder what your thoughts are on Stormy Daniels coming forward, especially in light of some of the comments that we've been getting on our site about sex workers in general. One of our listeners wrote on our website, the1a.org, a sex worker complaining about harassment, slapping, and other kinds of unwanted attention? Well, gee, the yardstick would be not to be in an industry where violence, taunting, and leering is encouraged. Wouldn't the solution be for individuals to refuse going into this trashy industry in the first place? I've cleaned toilets and done many things except the sex trade to earn a living, and all individuals should do the same. When you sell your body, you are perceived as not respecting yourself and can therefore be treated any which way. Jackie St. James, what about that?
Well, I mean, honestly, somebody can choose Stormy and any person working in the sex industry. It's their decision what they want to do with their body. It's their decision how they want to pursue a career. And Stormy is, like Shine Louise said, I mean, she is she's an inspiration. She is a good representation of our industry. We have quite a few women in this industry, women and men, that are confident in their choices. And by somebody choosing to work in sex work does not necessarily or does not at all imply that there is consent all the time whenever there's sex. It's a job, and their choice to do their job is it involves consent when they're on set. That does not mean that they're consenting wherever else they are.
Chris Sardina, I welcome your thoughts on Stormy Daniels, but particularly I'd love a clearer definition of what exactly we mean when we say sex work. When we talk about sex workers, who exactly are we talking about here?
Well, this could be anyone in the industry, from those who work in street economies to the adult film industry. So whether there's survival work, there's paid work. Stormy Daniels has given me life in light of the two pieces of horrific legislation that just passed against sex trafficking, which, you know, includes sex work in there. I thought she was well-spoken. I have a whole new respect for her, and it is, I just thought she handled herself well, considering Anderson Cooper kept putting her in the position to look like, to look not well, and try to depict her as someone that didn't have a brain in her head. So I was really proud of the way she handled the interview, and she just gave me life. I'm really happy for her right now.
Before I come to you, Susie Q, I should note that a number of our listeners are agreeing with what Jackie St. James had to say. Amanda responded on our Facebook page when we put out the prompt, "Are sex workers allowed to say Me Too?" Amanda wrote on our Facebook page, "OMG, of course, yes, especially them. For far too long, they've been treated as disposable members of society." And Dia wrote on our Facebook page, "Sex work is not synonymous with blanket consent. No matter the choice of profession, it is still my body, and you still need my permission to touch it." Susie Q, what about that, the applicability of Me Too to sex work?
Ooh, I'm so glad you asked. And big shout outs to your listeners who are giving supportive comments. That's not all the time that we see that, and that just warms my heart. So in regards to Me Too, I think this really goes back to, you know, why I chose the sex industry in the first place. I'm a third generation feminist, and the feminism I was raised with is centered around the idea that no one, least of all a man and least of all the state, is allowed to tell me as a woman what I can do with my body, or as a person, really. Feminism is for everyone. No one can tell me what I can do with my body except me. And so with that social algebra, if you will, I ended up choosing the sex industry. And with that same social algebra, but no matter what you think of the sex industry or what you would choose or not choose to do with your body, if you hold that truth to be self-evident, that no one's allowed to be in charge of it except you, of course sex workers are included in the Me Too movement. No one has the right to tell you what to do with your body, whether you do sex for a living or whether you clean toilets. I wouldn't have you come over to my house and say, "Oh, goodness, so glad you're here. I've got a blockage that you wouldn't believe in the guest bathroom. Get in there, girl." No one would do that. So why are we expected? Because the job is different, because the job is stigmatized. Why do people believe that, you know, we're not allowed the same sort of respect and rights?
Megan wrote on our website, the1a.org, "I know a sex worker, and she completely feels that Me Too applies to her as well. Anti-sex work laws are just another way of the government policing women's bodies." Susie Q, we have to pause in just a moment, but I think that might be a good place to come back to you with regard to the Adult Performer Advocacy Committee. Are there certain things that the committee focuses on in terms of advocacy that might further Me Too for sex workers?
Absolutely. So we were, of course, deeply entrenched in the hashtag Let Us Survive campaign as of recently, which was the sex trafficking survivors and sex workers alike, as well as our allies, came together to speak out against FESTA, FOSTA, a bill that recently passed in the Senate that will take away resources that sex workers and victims currently use to survive. So the Adult Performer Advocacy Committee is intent on ensuring that resources that are sex work inclusive, sex work friendly, whether they be mental health resources, addiction services, homelessness services, that we have those at the ready for our community, because it is so hard to navigate those systems as a sex worker. Another thing we're incredibly concerned with in regards to Me Too and the two women who came forward recently is, you know, establishing a set of protocol that will ensure that sex workers, when they go to work, can feel safe, that there is something that we all kind of adhere to in regards to consent, sexual harassment. We want to establish something. You know, I've worked on several different sets where we use a checklist. So before you go in, there's a long list of what you do and don't want done to your body. So I think a lot of people, when they watch adult film, don't realize that we are making movies for the most part. And there's a lot that you don't see behind the scenes, including tools such as a performer checklist. So often, depending on the company I'm shooting for, when I go into work, the first thing I do is fill out paperwork, show my ID, and I'm often presented with a checklist in regards to what activities I am open to or not open to that day, what words and language I am open to or not open to that day, and what parts of my body are available that day. And it can be pretty exhaustive. So as the Adult Performer Advocacy Committee Secretary, I'm working with the board to draft something that's open source, an open source document that's another resource that, especially in a time when so many performers are creating their own content, which is an amazing way to take the power back from folks who are bad players in this industry and, you know, be in charge of your own content, make your own money. In a time when we're all starting to do that, having these resources so that we can do better, so that the future of adult film and sex work is one that is, you know, post Me Too, post Time's Up,
right?
Because time is up in our industry and all our industries.
And Susie, I want to make sure I'm clear. When you say certain kinds of language you're comfortable with, I assume this goes beyond profanity. You mean things like using racial slurs in a sexual context or demeaning
Absolutely.
Language, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. As well as, you know, what you would like your body called, right?
Right.
Like, we have a lot of different words for this, especially in a sexualized setting.
We do. Many of which we can't say on NPR, powerful. And we know that, but we do have a lot of words for
exactly.
that. Right.
There's a lot of words, and some of them are triggering, and some of them are totally fine, completely depending on the day, the person, the chemistry. You know, we're not dealing with things that are immovable, right? You know, you could walk onto set and have one thing be totally fine one day and the next day with the same person, even, you know,
right.
If you had a rough night the night before or you're feeling a little under the weather, the same activity cannot be okay, which is why checking in, consent, communication, empowering performers to really take charge, speak up for themselves, and creating a culture where that's okay.
Right.
So many people are afraid to come forward. And that's why it's so amazing to see Stormy Daniels going up against, you know, the number one abuser in the nation.
Jackie St. James, part of the reason why we're having this conversation is because there was a somewhat high-profile case of some accused boundary violations on an adult film set. Two performers named Lee Raven and Riley Nixon made a YouTube video that was about an hour long in which they alleged that they were misled during the booking process. This is Lee Raven speaking about her experience. Again, this is fairly graphic. The clip you're about to hear is about 45 seconds long, so if you need to turn away and turn back for whatever reason, it's about 45 seconds long. Here's Lee describing her experience.
The PA asks a question to Rico. I don't really remember what it was. Rico's response was, black payback. And he comes in to the scene and hits me very, very hard across the face. It wasn't a fake slap. It wasn't a slap that we typically use in porn to make things look a little bit more intense than they actually are. It was very painful, and it definitely stunned me. And this was a very, very, very rough to where if I pulled back, I got punished, so to speak. I would get hit. I would get called names.
That was Lee Raven describing some of her experience during what she says was a misleading booking process. Jackie, your reaction to that?
It's a very hard thing to listen to. And it seems what's shocking to me is that it seems like the onus of responsibility lies on every single person except for the talent there, that the PA didn't speak up, that the director didn't speak up, that the male talent behaved as he did, that the agent didn't say anything. I don't know if Lee was booked through an agent or not, but you know, there's so many people culpable here for allowing this to have gone down. And I'm shocked that nobody spoke out. You know, on our set, on my set, there's full disclosure before somebody even arrives as to what they're doing, who they're working with, what the content is, because just as Susie was saying, there are a lot of trigger points for people and things that make people uncomfortable, but this isn't even about that. I mean, this is about full-on assault happening on a set.
Well, actually, I'm sorry, Susie, if you would sit tight for just one second, I just want to keep making my way around the panel. And I did want to come to back to Shine Louise Houston for a second and ask about that. I mean, I think the idea that most performers could go into a set, I mean, leaving Me Too aside, but that a performer could say, I don't feel comfortable taking off my clothing today on a set where you might have someone who is more predatory, who is more threatening, who is more pushy. Mm-hmm. I imagine that could not only cost you work that day, but it could get you blacklisted. Like you could develop a reputation that could cost you work.
Yeah, I think there's definitely for performers for fear of retaliation, as far as like if you speak up about something, if you say no, you don't want to do this. I feel like there have been tools within the industry, like APAC, that give talent agency, or like they have some support in saying no, they're not going to be completely, you know, shunned by the entire industry if, like, you know, if they just say, I'm not going to do this today. But what I think is interesting about Me Too is that now you have support outside of the industry. I think I'm glad that Me Too is happening, because I feel like that gets the larger society, large communities involved in supporting sex workers and changing the attitudes about just the, you know, it's workers' rights.
Right.
It's basic workers' rights.
And I do want to get more into the way that moves forward in just one second. I do need to get to a few listener comments, though, first. Kelly emailed, I'm a licensed massage therapist. It's easy to believe that once you lie down on my table, you have handed your body over to me and I get to do whatever I feel appropriate. Not true. I tell every client, you never cede control of your body to me. You always get to say what can and can't happen. Why? Because we all own our bodies. We can say yes in some cases and no in others, even when they look like they're the same. Chris Sardina, I wonder how much of that is part of this larger debate. I mean, Me Too is a reflection of us as a society. It's a societal problem. I wonder how much of this you think is unique to various forms of sex work, and how much of these issues are just part of the way that we talk about sex and sexuality and our bodies in general.
Thank you. I'm going to piggyback off the other panelist here. Desiree Alliance is a national sex worker rights organization, so we speak for all the voices in sex industries. And so I think the Me Too movement is getting separated by who gets to wear the halo and who gets taken out with the trash. You know, I think it's becoming separated because we've lived with toxic masculinity for so long. And women, you know, we have been trained to think of the Madonna whore complex. And so I really think instead of, you know, of dividing this platform, that we should be combining our movements and our strengths as women, because I don't know any woman alive in any industry that has not had some type of toxic masculinity formed against her. I don't know any.
We'll pick up our conversation in just a moment. Stay close.
When C.C. Wong met his mom's new tenant, he never suspected he'd end up getting replaced as a son, or that his replacement might have sinister motives. This week, Invisibilia looks at the things we don't say to our loved ones and the misunderstandings it can lead to. Listen on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we get back to our conversation, we wanted to let you know about something exciting that I'm doing this weekend. Exciting and a little bit scary. Normally, I'm the one who's asking the questions, right? But this Sunday morning, I'll be on the other side of the table as a panelist on Meet the Press on NBC. We will be recapping the week's headlines, and now I'm really going to understand what our panelists deal with every day. I've been on MTP Daily on MSNBC a few times, but this is the big show. So please come support me, pray for me. It is Easter Sunday, after all, as I join the panel on Meet the Press this Sunday morning on your local NBC station. Check your listings, and please, set your DVR. Back now to our conversation with Chris Sardina, Susie Q, Jackie St. James, and Shine Louise Houston. Valerie emailed, there are two sex trafficking bills pending in Congress now, FOSTA in the House, F-O-S-T-A, and SESTA in the Senate, S-E-S-T-A. They would criminalize online platforms for sex workers to find clients. These bills might be well-intentioned. Obviously, no one supports sex trafficking because of violence and coercion. But the unintended consequence would push sex workers onto the street and unregulated areas. Susie Q, what about FOSTA and SESTA? What's the reaction to that from sex workers?
So it's been devastating to the sex worker and the survivor community. Sex trafficking victims and sex workers alike, as well as our allies, really came together to speak out in the hashtag Let Us Survive, Survivors Against SESTA, Survivors Against FOSTA campaign. And it was very disheartening to see our representatives and our senators essentially not listen to survivors. You know, I want to clue you into what the reality of this really looks like. So when I started in the industry, there was a platform called Redbook that I used to screen clients to make sure that they, you know, didn't murder me and allow, you know, using that tool to check references, to stay online as opposed to having to rely on a pimp or a trafficker or the street. You know, that was something that I personally utilized. And post the FBI seizing Redbook and shutting it down, actually, Kristen D'Angelo of Swap Sacramento did a needs assessment and a survey of workers in that area. And they saw that over a third of people that they surveyed in Sacramento who had been affected by the Redbook shutdown were now working on the street. And all of them had experienced sexual violence. All of them had been raped since then. It's not hypothetical. It's very real. And sex workers are not going to have the same access to the potential that Me Too and Time's Up really offers until we see a change in the criminalization, which will lead to a change in the stigma. I've taken sex workers who were coerced via fraud for commercial sex. Now, that's the UN's definition of human trafficking. So I've taken trafficking victims. I've facilitated them going to the police right here in Orange, California. That person was denied a rape kit. That person was denied a police report unless they could take a look at her phone and see what else she might be up to. And, you know, they didn't see it. They didn't see it as an issue of trafficking. They saw it as a byproduct of the industry, I think. I saw a sex worker speak out earlier today or yesterday on social media saying, you know, sexual assault shouldn't be an occupational hazard.
I hear you on that. So, I mean, sexual assault shouldn't be an occupational hazard no matter what occupation you are in. No one deserves that. I do wonder, though, Jackie St. James, if I could come back to you about some of the social stigma that maybe prevents the Me Too movement from permeating sex work. Jenny emailed, of course sex workers deserve protection from harassment at work. They're humans, aren't they? The reason this is even a conversation is because of the stigma associated with sex work. Stigmatization is the problem, not sex work. However, we have a number of listeners who've left comments like this one, which was left on our website, the1a.org. The whole thing is seedy. Why does anyone care? This woman exploits her orifices in the most vulgar of ways, up close with strangers. There are better folks to celebrate. Jackie St. James, I wonder what you would say to people who say, listen, this clearly is an industry that is rife with problems. Maybe you should go do something else. Even just because it's something that you enjoy doesn't mean that society should wrap its rules around you so you can safely do something that a lot of people consider vulgar.
Well, the fact that a lot of people consider it vulgar is their own problem. Like I said, women, men, if they're legal, consenting adult, can choose whatever profession they want. And why should they be like somehow punished or not receive the same rights simply because they're choosing a profession that this person doesn't agree with. You know, there's a lot of things I don't agree with. There's a lot of corporations I don't agree with. But I still think people should be protected and should feel safe in their work environment. But I think the biggest problem is the stigmatization because we don't have the same access to things that somebody in the mainstream or civilian world would have. And that is where the root of all of our problems are kind of lying. I mean, yes, there are bad people. There's bad people in every industry, though. There's really awful people in corporate America as well doing really awful things. There are women that are getting assaulted at their corporate jobs. So you can't say that it's just limited to us, but because, you know, sex is on the table in our industry, somehow it means that we're consenting to every vile, horrible thing that happens. And that's not true.
I wonder also, Shine, if maybe part of the urgency for this, as much as people might consider it vulgar for someone to be working in an industry that deals with sex, is we buy a lot of porn in this country. A lot of young men learn about sex from what they see in pornography. And the sexuality that's in our culture informs the sexuality that ends up in our homes and our families and our lives. So to me, at least, it seems, Shine, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's a direct connection between the views we have of sex and sexuality and the content we buy and the people who produce it and the values we espouse. It feels like it's all locked together.
It definitely is all locked together. And I think, we have very, I would say schizophrenic ideas about sexuality. We think it's wonderful and it's great, but if you do it with the wrong kind of the wrong person, then it's horrible. Like somebody mentioned before, like the virgin whore complex, you know, I find it very bizarre that there's still an attitude out there. Like if a woman has sex, then obviously she's stupid or dumb because she let you have sex with her. There's a fear around like female sexuality. It's like, why do we need to police it so much? Why do we have to control it so much? I definitely think, you know, there needs to be a lot of work on masculinity and detaching masculine identity from controlling female sexuality. I feel like there's, you know, if you are adhering to masculinity, like the idea of toxic masculinity, like misogyny is inherent in that, and that's a problem and that needs to change. I also think, you know, in my experience of like getting into porn, I wanted to make porn that I felt was more honest to my experiences. I was looking for different types of performances of sexuality to kind of throw that into the loop. Do you know what I mean? If I can make images like this, like, oh, you see, like, this is a possibility for your sexuality. Maybe it changes your attitudes about your own sexuality, about femininity, about masculinity, about queerness. But, you know, it is all wrapped together. Like, my attitudes about sex and sexuality inform what I make was going to change, you know, possibly change somebody who views it. And hopefully that snowballs, because I really think, you know, there needs to be a shift in thinking about sexuality and what it means to be sexual and how we value that. It seems like, you know, we devalue anybody who is outspoken about their sexuality or is really, really likes their sexuality and likes to share that. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know if that answers your question.
I see what you're getting at. And I appreciate not only you talking about how you got into it, because we're hearing from a number of other people who also have shared their experiences as sex workers. Sarah emailed, "I am a former sex worker, and I strongly identified with Stormy Daniels when she talked about reluctantly having sex with President Trump, even when trying to set limits," referring to the interview on 60 Minutes. "Even when trying to set limits, I always felt a certain pressure in the sex industry to go the extra mile or suffer the consequences of losing work. I wonder if any of your guests can speak to this pressure and how it affects workers in the industry." Chris Sardino, why don't you respond to Sarah? What about that pressure and that fear about setting limits, setting boundaries, and knowing when to say no?
Well, I've been in non-paying situations that I have reluctantly
given it up, so to speak. So, the difference between consensual sex work versus versus non-paying sex work, I've been in a hell of a lot more situations that have been more dangerous in non-paying sex work than my ability to be able to negotiate what's going to happen during this time period and what's going to happen for the monetary value and such. So, you know, to put it that way, I've been in more danger with men and than I have ever been in when I have negotiated my body on my grounds.
And can we just make this clear, since we're talking about consent? I want to make sure we're all on the same page. If one is in a sexual situation and one's partner says no, that's no, right?
Then it should be honored no matter what.
Okay. I want to make that clear. This has come up in past conversations about sexuality and masculinity. When one says no, you know, Susie, even if it's a sex worker, even someone who's paid, no is still something that should be honored, right?
Yes, absolutely. And it's more than no, right? It is the power dynamic such. Like, one thing that Lee and Riley brought up in their video is that they were alone with four men in, you know, a warehouse somewhere in Southern California. The weighing your options and knowing that you don't have the same access to justice as someone who doesn't do sex work. Knowing, who are you going to call? The police in Orange, California? They're certainly not going to help you. What's the plan? What's the actual plan? So until we can access justice in the same way another worker can access justice at the, you know, at the basic level of a citizen, that's not going to change, no matter what protocols we set up as the Adult Performer Advocacy Committee. Right. Like, we can only do so much if we can't go to the cops.
We should probably talk about advocacy for the remainder of our time here. There is currently a strike happening in New York City involving exotic dancers, a stripper strike, with women protesting against colorism and what they say are other unfair labor practices. One of our producers sat down with some of the dancers. Here is a dancer named Vanity Reds describing her experience.
I was choked. This man came behind me and choked me. Yes. And so this is where it gets good. So the security guard walks past, because he's doing me like this in a headlock. And so me, I don't want to, you know, like, do anything, because he could be stronger than me and then end up, like, doing something way worse. So the security guy walks past, and I'm, trying to say, help me, but not, like, actually saying help me. So the guy, like, hears me. And so he just looks, and he's like, and then he walks past. And so I go up to him afterwards. He was like, well, you should have just kind of moved out of his way or something like that. Basically victim blaming. And I'm like, but you're the security guard, so you're supposed to grab him and tell him to get out of the club.
That was Vanity Reds, an exotic dancer, speaking to one of our producers. Susie Q, I know our time is short, but what are the resources for someone who is in sex work who finds themselves in kind of a Me Too moment? What would you say are the first steps that they should take when they feel like a line has been crossed?
So I encourage folks to reach out to the Adult Performer Advocacy Committee. I encourage people to use the justice system as it stands and seek out advocates such as myself, such as, SWAP USA, Desiree Alliance. There are Red Light Legal is another great one. You can have legal representation that is not going to shame you and tell you to quit your job and tell you that this is your fault. Those resources are sparse, but they do exist. And we encourage people to speak up. We encourage people to take action, and we support survivors and victims and workers 100%.
Jackie St. James, before we're out of time, I imagine that every industry has its Harvey Weinstein. Has the people who are just known to be trouble. Without naming any names, since these people are not here to defend themselves, what do you think they should know about the state of this movement? Is time up for among sex workers?
Yes. I mean, yes. And I think that there is a growing movement right now to hold people accountable for that behavior, especially an adult.
That's Jackie St. James, adult film director. Jackie, thanks very much for spending the hour with us.
Thank you.
Chris Sardina, coordinator for the Desiree Alliance, a coalition fighting for sex workers' rights. Chris, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Susie Q, host of The Whorecast and the secretary of the Adult Performer Advocacy Committee. Susie, thanks very much.
Thank you so much. And don't forget, June 2nd is International Whores Day and National Day of Action. We'll see you there.
And Shine Louise Houston, the founder of Pink and White Productions. Shine, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening, and thanks for sharing your stories with us. This is 1A.